Hi, everybody. It's Johnny B. Truant from the Badass Project. I am here today with Susan Lakey. She tells me that's the correct pronunciation, which I would have totally messed up. And Susan is a writer. She's a contributor to NoMeatAthlete.com, which is how I know her, and several other publications. We've just talked on Twitter and so forth. And the thing that really made me decide to talk to her, and I did the nomination, was she mentioned she'd been following the Badass Project, and she saw, she mentioned something about her disability. And I said, what's your disability? And then she pointed me to a post on NoMeatAthlete.com that is called On Refusing to Settle in the Incredible Power of Denial, in which she tells me that she's deaf. So what we're going to do here is we had a hard time figuring out how to do this interview because normally I just talk outright with people and I can't do that. And you can't do lip reading over Skype. And Susan says she doesn't know sign language. Not that I know it, but she can't have anyone translate for her. So what we're going to do is I will ask and then I'm going to type to her. And then what we'll do is maybe for the first one I'll show that, but then I'm going to edit that out. So another fun thing on the Badass Project. So with that said, how are you, Susan? Okay. So what I'll do is I'll just say the I'll say the things for the benefit of anybody who can hear, and then I'll type to Susan, so that'll be the way we'll go here. So the first question is, could you tell the story of that post and how, what made you write it, and why the tone of it was so interesting, and that's why I'm talking to you today?
Okay. Well, I had been writing for NoMeatAthlete for about a year, and Matt, who is the guy that runs the whole website, asked me if I wanted to do some podcasts and some video blogging, stuff like that. And what happened basically was, in that moment, I had realized that I had been writing for him for an entire year, and I had never told him that I was deaf. And it was kind of a weird moment for me because I had never really been in that situation before. Most people, when they meet me, the accent kind of gets it away. I'm deaf, I was born in Texas, you put the two together, this is what comes up. And so I was debating for a long time about how I should tell Matt, because I didn't think that I should tell him because it might make him view me differently, because I didn't want him to think, first of all, that I was some sort of liar because I had been holding this information from him, but also because I didn't want him to suddenly treat me different, and I was really nervous about that. So I talked with some friends and some family members, and all of them basically said the same thing, which is, you know, who gives a damn? And so I told Matt, and Matt immediately said, you need to tell the readers, because this is something that's incredible. The fact that I didn't know it, the readers didn't know it, nobody knew it, it's pretty remarkable. So I wrote the post, and I had no idea it was going to get the response that it did. It was overwhelmingly positive. It was way cool. And so when you asked me if I wanted to be on the Badass Project, that was weird for me, because you interview actual badasses. Okay, you interview people who do remarkable things, and they accomplish these amazing feats that I could really never think of doing. And I'm just an asshole who's a human columnist, and I don't really think there's anything that badass about it. But you seem to think so. I'm here. So, thank you.
Okay. Well, that's the interesting thing, is we were just talking about this today, of how we define what a badass is. And one of the things that I thought is that it's, we have for positioning said that in terms of physical disabilities of some sort. And what's coming more to the fore is that badass is a state of mind. And that particular post that you wrote is, and I will link to it, it was very much, it never occurred to me to say that I was deaf.
That's pretty much how I've always been growing up. Basically from the second that my parents found out that I was deaf, they basically said, so what? And it was pretty cool because when I lost my hearing, when I was 2.5, I had already been developing like a normal kid. I was talking, I was singing, I was toilet trained, all this stuff. And then I lost my hearing, and I went back to crying. I went back to not communicating at all. I went back to diapers, all of these things. And my parents went to the doctor, who said, yep, she's deaf. There's really nothing you can do about it. Just learn sign language and put her in a school for the deaf. And my parents essentially said no. And so they took me to a different doctor. And this doctor was cool. She said, yeah, well, she's deaf. There's not much we can do, but I'm not going to say no right away. Here's what we'll do. Bring her back in a week, and if you taught her a new word, I'll work with you. So they brought me back in a week, and I had learned two new words, Easter Bunny. And that kind of set the tone for the rest of my life. I never just did what I was supposed to do. I tried to take it one step further. And my parents have always told me that I could do anything I wanted, and I took that way too literally. And anything that I wanted to do, I at least attempted. And it's pretty cool to see that kind of support, and it really shaped me into the attitude that I have today. So I really don't say I can't do anything. I'm going to say I'll at least try it. And most of the time it works out. Sometimes we have to make adjustments, but nothing's impossible. So it's pretty cool.
Well, let's talk about the power of denial as you defined it. And the idea of basically sticking your head in the sand and saying, we're not going to look at that, is the sort of thing that a lot of people could say that's not facing reality. But in your case, it's been empowering. Can you tell me what that was about the denial, both for you and for your parents, that anything was different?
That's pretty much a coping mechanism. Rather than saying she's deaf, she can't do it, just deal with that, it's more she's normal. And it wasn't that we made a thing out of it, we just kind of proceeded as usual. And it was nice because when I had doctors saying that I was supposed to go to a school for the deaf, my parents said no, that I could go to a normal school. And I used that term very loosely, by the way, normal. But I never went to a school for the deaf. I just went to regular school with the regular kids and never thought anything of it. When kids started picking on me and I would come home crying, my mom would say basically that the kids were picking on everybody for something. I wasn't anything special for it, that I had to learn to stand up for myself. And so that's when I started using humor as a way to cope. And it was really something that turned my life around. It wasn't like I needed special treatment because I'm deaf. Sometimes I say things that sound really funny, or sometimes I'm walking away and someone says something that I don't hear and I have no idea what happened. It's kind of funny. When I go and I meet people or I talk to people, I never say, oh, you need to speak extra slowly for me. I just try to keep up. And if I miss something, I say, hey, do you mind repeating that? I don't make a big thing out of it. I've never really been the type of person to say I need special treatment. I just deal with what I have. I play the hand that I've been dealt, so to speak.
So from a devil's advocate position, do you think that going to a school for the deaf, that you could have, that there would have been any benefit in that? Or do you think that going through the way that you did was better?
Okay, well, that's not something for me to really speak on because I really don't know much about schools for the deaf. I really don't know much about deaf culture. I was never involved in deaf culture growing up, and it's not because I have anything against it. It's just because I went to a school with other hearing kids, and I did the same thing that the other hearing kids did. And I never really labeled myself as a deaf person. So I know there are plenty of people who have gone to the school for the deaf, and they've gone on to be really successful. So I think it has its advantages. I think it's really about the support system that each person has in place and what each person is willing to do. I'm not going to lie, I had to work really hard to get to the point where I am today. I don't know sign language because I went to speech therapy for almost 22 years. I went to auditory training where I learned how to lip read. I learned how to listen. I had to really work hard at it. And I had to have a support system with teachers, parents, friends, family members, religious groups, everyone who understood what I was trying to do. And they didn't limit me, but they also didn't coddle me in any way. They really pushed me and they encouraged me. So that was my situation. I took one class in college for sign language because I needed a foreign language credit. And I got a B- in it. I'm a horrible deaf person for that, I'm sure. But it's just not something that I ever needed to use. But for other people, sign language, school for the deaf can absolutely be a benefit. It's a threat for them.
Okay, well, let's talk about the reason you write for athletic sites. Because I'm curious whether your attitude regarding screw that, I'm not going to do what people tell me to do, translates into the athletic endeavors that you do today. And let's go into that, because I know you do Ironmans and so forth.
Okay, the whole Ironman thing is completely a fluke. I was not really an athlete of any sort growing up. So I still don't consider myself an athlete today, by the way. I'm someone who does triathlons, and I'm okay at it. I don't die.
That's an athlete.
I started doing Ironman because someone that I love very much was an Ironman triathlete. And he made it look really easy. And I had just needed a challenge of some sort. I was doing 5Ks. I had to sign up for a half marathon. And basically, my friend Carlos told me anybody can do an Ironman. And so I said, if anybody can do one, all right, why not me? And so I signed up. And in hindsight, it was probably a really stupid idea, but it turned out to be one of the best things that I ever did. And it's about pushing yourself. And I feel like it's just an extension of what I've been doing my entire life. I pushed myself through school. I graduated from high school, graduated from college early. I got my master's degree. I'm finishing my doctorate. I was a professor, a college professor, by the time I was 22 years old. This Ironman thing is just another thing that I'm doing. I'm kind of an overachiever, in case you haven't figured that out. I think, too, with all of this athletic competition, it's really inspiring to see just anybody doing triathlon. Anybody can do a marathon. Anybody can do a 5K. And it's not about whether your ears work or not. It's not even about whether a leg is missing or anything like that. Really, anybody can do it. You just have to find the right way to do it and have to be willing to look at it. So that's what competition means to me in the sense of Ironman. It's what I can do. It's what I'm capable of. It's what I'm willing to put myself through. And I love it. And for me, it's really brought a lot of really good things into my life. It got me started with writing for Know Me Athlete, which led to writing for a competitive magazine, which I find really odd because I'm not really a writer and I'm not really an athlete. Yeah, I have a column in a national running magazine. It's very strange. Triathlon also brought me to my current boyfriend, and things have been really wonderful with him. Triathlon has introduced me to so many amazing people, and for that I'll be thankful. It's really helped me out more than just physically. It's been really cool.
didn't you like lose a bunch of weight doing that too? Like, wasn't there a personal transformation?
Yeah, I was kind of fat. I was a little bit chubby. I became a vegetarian and began losing weight that way. And once I started losing the weight, I realized that my body was capable of doing some pretty cool things. So I decided to sign up for my first 5K. And I had never run a race before. I mean, I was involved in, you know, the normal school sports stuff because I had to be, but I was never really athletic. So I just signed up for the race, and I showed up, and I ran it, and it was really cool. So I kept doing that. And it was never about losing the weight, but I did lose weight in the process. And it was really something that was pretty cool to see, but at the same time, I swear, everybody asked me how they can lose weight on the same diet that I was on, and I was never on a diet. It was more about that, seeing what my body could do. It was pretty cool.
One of the guys that I talked to recently, and he may run before yours, Martin Sibley, has this thing about people aren't disabled unless society imposes that on them. Basically, the idea is adapt, and if you can adapt something, then you can do it. So, can you talk a little bit about the adaptations that you've had to make? I mean, when you ride a bike, typically you want to be able to hear the traffic and that sort of thing. When you said you swam, and how did you hear the starting gun and all that?
So, as far as adaptations and accommodations, I try really hard to do everything as normally as possible. I don't really make a big deal out of the fact that I'm deaf when I go to races. I don't really ask for a lot of special accommodation. I usually let the race officials know that I'm deaf so that if anything happens, I get a penalty, or if you know, there's an emergency of any sort, I have already told the race officials so that they are aware that, hey, when you talk to her, she needs to see your face. And I've never had a problem with that. If for whatever reason something major happens, say a crash or whatever, I always wear a road ID. And along with the normal medical information, I have under that I'm deaf and I read that. So that way, if I can't communicate that to a paramedic or whatever, they know.
Mm-hmm.
I go in to the swim just like everybody else. If you've ever been in the start of a triathlon, it's just a bunch of thick fish in the water with clobbering each other. And I figure I don't really need to hear the starting gun for that. Just when people start punching me, I go. And it's always worked for me. On the bike, I don't usually wear my hearing aid during the race. And that's because the race roads are usually closed off. So I'm a little bit safer there. When I'm on the road just for training, though, I always wear my hearing aid. I always tell my boyfriend or my training partner where I'm going to be, when I'm going to be back, just in case anything happens. But I try to be very aware of my surroundings, and I try to ride on roads that have very little traffic. If I'm unable to find that type of a situation, then I usually ride my bike indoors on a trainer so that I don't have to deal with that hazard of not hearing somebody coming up behind me. On the run, though, I pop my hearing aid in, and I go, and I just keep going, and it's never really been an issue for me. Sometimes when things get kind of sweaty, it's really hot here in Arizona, for example, I'll take my hearing aid out because I can't get water in my hearing aid, and when I'm sweating a lot, I get water in there, so I'll just run without it. I always try to have someone toward the finish line holding my hearing aid, though, so I can grab it from them as I run past, because hearing people cheer at the finish line, even though I can't hear all of it, it's still pretty amazing. And the coolest thing was with my Ironman finish last year at Ironman Wisconsin, I didn't even need my hearing aid. I couldn't feel it. Everyone was so loud that you could feel it in your bones. It was so amazing. I don't think I could have asked for a better finish to that race.
What's that like? Because I always like to talk to people about things that are unique to them and their situation and their condition and their endeavors that I don't understand and that people might not understand. But that notion of feeling sound, Like when Marley Matlin, who is also deaf, was on Dancing with the Stars, she was able to dance because she could feel the beat. Can you explain that to me?
I can actually kind of relate to what you were saying because a really different phenomenon, even though I do have hearing aids, I don't hear everything, so I rely a lot on visual cues and a lot on my voice sound. And when I was in high school, I was actually in band. I played the saxophone, and you would not believe it, I was actually really good at it. I won awards and stuff. And in band, what they would do was, instead of putting me where the saxophone players normally sit, they moved me to the front of the percussion section. And what I would do is I would watch the director with the baton, and that's how I would stay visually on cue, but I could always feel the percussion behind me too. And that always kept me on the beat. And so with a lot of things, that's how I relied on knowing what's going on. It's not so much the auditory cue, it's more of a visual cue or some other sort of sensation. In my classroom, I tell my students, if I've got my back to you, I'm not going to hear you. And so if you raise your hand, I'll see you, that's great. I've had people throw things at me, that's cool, as long as there's nothing sharp or heavy, we're okay. So my students are pretty cool with that. Pretty much everybody knows that there's alternate ways to get my attention. When I'm listening to music or watching a movie or something like that, it's really about the visual and the feel of the sound, not so much about what the sound is like. I don't know quite how to explain it, except maybe if you just stuff your ears with cotton and just walked around and tried to figure out what's going on around you, you'd adapt pretty quickly, I think. Most people are able to compensate for the loss of one sense with the other. So.
It's almost like you have a superpower. I'm wondering if that whole thing about your other... People usually say with blind people, where the other senses sharpen, and it sounds like that's what you're describing. Do you feel like you're... So, for instance, when I was talking and I'm asking questions, sometimes you'll nod at appropriate times as if you can hear me, and I know you can't. So I'm just wondering if you're picking up visual cues from me that, see, like right now, if you're picking up cues that I don't even know that I'm giving.
I'm mainly not weird. And that's the thing that a lot of people find really hard to believe about me, is that I'm able to read their lips and not really hear much of what's going on and still be okay. And like I said before, I don't know sign language. I know maybe 4 cuss words in sign language, and that's pretty much it. And so I really do, in order to live a normal life, I really do need to be able to communicate with other people, and lip reading is how I do that. Yet a lot of people find it really hard to wrap their heads around it. I was actually at this party one time, and this older lady came up to me and started talking to me, and she said, "So what do you do for a living?" And I said, "Oh, I'm a college professor." And she goes, "Oh, how do you teach?" And I said, "In a normal classroom with my students, and we, you know, talk to each other." And she said, "But you're deaf. How do you communicate with people?" And I said, "What do you think we're doing right now?" And she looked at me for a second, and then she goes, "Oh, that's the vessel," and was completely condescending, and it was awful. But that's kind of how people have always been when they meet me, because they're not really sure what to make of me. I'm usually the first deaf person that most people have met or talked to. Most people see deaf people out there, but they're all using sign language, and so it's not something that they can really work with. And when they talk to me, they're not really sure if I'm deaf or if I'm hearing, because I talk kind of funny, but at the same time, I'm not using sign language. So it's very different for a lot of people. It's not a superpower, I promise you. It's a lot of practice. It took a long time for me to be able to learn how to look read and how to speak. And it's nothing that's innate in me. It's everything that's been hard work.
So, just for a personal example, I'm diabetic, and I, for a long time, was really insistent that people not treat me any differently, like to the point where I was, I didn't want to tell people and that sort of thing when I was a teenager. And I'm wondering if your not knowing sign language and all of that and this whole power of denial thing is sort of, is in a way sort of an FU to the notion of being different. And just what that's all about, because I see some of the same threads between us.
It is, kind of. It wasn't a choice that I made when I was younger. It was a choice that my parents made for me, and I'm really glad they made that choice. The whole idea of not knowing sign language eventually did become a fuck you to the disability because I was doing just fine without it. I'm told all the time that I need to go and get a cochlear implant. And I always get that from doctors, from audiologists, pretty much any medical professional. They tell me, Susan, you would do so much better if you had a cochlear implant. I'm like, fuck you, I'm just fine. And that's something that I feel really strongly about. Right now, I'm doing really well with what I've got. And if it's not broken, don't bother fixing it. And maybe someday in the future, I may get to a point where I need a cochlear implant. But right now, I'm okay with where I'm at, and I seem to be doing just fine, and I'm not worried about it. And so that's my big fuck you to this point. The sign language thing, living my life the way that I am, not, you know, buying into what a deaf person is supposed to be, that's more an attitude that I have toward life in general. I don't think of anything particular to being deaf, it's that I really like proving people wrong in general.
If you get along fine without it, why would you get a cochlear implant? Is there anything that there, would there be any point to that?
It's debatable. I really don't hear very much. I get enough right now that I'm able to manage the fine and everything that I do. Some people think that if I got a cochlear implant, I would hear more and also my speech would improve, which I mean, granted, if you sounded like this, you probably would want to change it too. But at the same time, it's not that big of a deal for me. I've never had anybody give me such grief for being deaf or for having that accent that I felt like it was necessary. I don't think it would change much, honestly, other than I would have a cochlear implant. I've heard that people who get cochlear implants later in life can be frustrated because when you get the implant, you have to relearn how to hear, and so it's like learning a new language. And I figure if I got a B- in one semester of sign language, I probably don't want to start over with anything else. So I'm okay with not having the cochlear implant for now.
But it doesn't seem like it would impact your life any if the argument is that you would be able to hear more and that you would speak more like I do. I guess I don't see what the point is if you haven't been hearing all this time and have been doing fine. I mean, there's no demonstrable change, right?
That's kind of the logic that I used to. I'm managing with what I have, and there's no reason to go out and modify that. I think it would be really frustrating, actually, for me to go out and start from scratch again. So I'm not worried about it at all, and I'm pretty good at telling people no, including doctors and audiologists, to tell me that I'm supposed to get this implant. So for the time being, they can all just kiss my ass.
That's one of the big things that that I personally am about and this project is about, is what works for you rather than an external societal definition of what normal would be. Much like my friend Warren McDonald, who said that originally he got the long prosthetic legs after losing his legs because that was kind of what was normal, and then realized it didn't make sense. I just really, you know, celebrate that attitude, I suppose.
Absolutely. And that's really what I try to convey in anything that I do. And when people ask me, you know, I've got a deaf child, what should I do with him or her? I just say whatever you think is best and always be encouraging of what the child wants to. And later in life, when I have people ask me, you know, what would you do in the situation if you were put in a really difficult decision or difficult circumstance, what would you do? And I said, it's not for me to decide. That's your decision to make. And it's not just about, you know, whether I need a cochlear implant or not. It's about anything in life. And every person has that individuality. They have their own needs. They have their own abilities. And so what works for me isn't necessarily going to work for the next person. And I think that that's a really good story about McDonald's, was because what works for him works really well for him. What works for him is not necessarily going to work for another person in a very similar circumstance, because maybe that person doesn't have the same abilities, or maybe that person doesn't have the same drive. So you really have to take it on a case-by-case basis rather than lumping everybody into one, oh, she's this label, or he is only able to do this because that's not right. What you really need to do is look at that individual.
So in conclusion, since you're only deaf, do you still feel that you aren't badass enough?
I am not badass enough. Just because I don't really do anything remarkable. It's nothing to do with I do this in spite of me being deaf, except I really don't do anything. I wake up, I go for a run, I go to work, I play with my dogs, I swim, I ride my bike. I'm a huge dork. I'm very socially awkward, but I don't do anything that really goes out in terms of the lives of people. So maybe one day if I find a cure for cancer, or maybe one day if, you know, I'm the next Oprah Winfrey, then maybe I'll consider myself badass enough. But I'm really not doing anything remarkable.
Well, if it's any consolation, Martin Sibley, who is, he has spinal muscular atrophy like John Morrow, and he has very limited use of his limbs. At the end of the interview, he said, okay, did you get what you wanted? Because I really kind of don't think that I'm badass enough, so you're in good company.
Then maybe Martin and I need to hang out and talk about how non-badass we are, and maybe if we, you know, put the two of us together, we can come up with something badass enough.
Excellent. Cool. Okay, well, that's about it. So I just want to thank you for being here. This has been easy, this typing thing. It hasn't been hard or weird at all. So I just want to thank you for being with me here today on the Badass Project.
Thank you for having me. I finally have fulfilled my lifelong dream of meeting you, even if it is only via webcam. But thank you, really, for having me.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. And this is Johnny B. Truant with Susan Lakey signing off for the Badass Project.